Welcome to the second hour of A Voice of a People, live here with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can also download a free app from your app store or from your free store. The app is called TuneIn. Download that on any electronic device and search WWGH. Or you can call in during a live broadcast in-house, which today will be on the phone, so you won't be able to call in. If you have any questions or would like to make any comments, please call 740-383-9944. You can also make note of that for future reference. Because you never know, one day you might want to call in and make a comment. Okay, so write that down. WWGH or WGH Talk, phone number 740-383-9944. Here we are, November the 11th of 2022. 14 days until Thanksgiving, right? Okay, 45 days until Christmas, 52 days until 2023. Is time going fast enough for you, even though we've moved back the time, which is supposed to be our regular time? And I'm sure many of you are trying to get used to this, as I am as well. My body still wants to get up at a certain time and ready to lay down at a certain time. So hopefully this will pass quickly so we can all get, you know, established like we need to be. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street here in Marion, Ohio. Phone number 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone 740-223-1515. Ongoing announcement, free produce every third Saturday of every month. This will take place November the 19th from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Please make note of this. They will be serving Thanksgiving dinners by driving through at 582 Lee Street. This will take place November the 23rd. It begins at 11 until 2 p.m. Okay. We also have Inspect Ohio, your one-call home inspection company with 30 years of experience working for you. The owner, Cheryl Lee, location, LaRue, Ohio. Phone there, 740-262-0939. I'd like to start my show off with a thought for today. It's titled, Near to Contentment. When you think of yesterday without regret and tomorrow without fear, you are near contentment. Near contentment. My guest is calling in now, David Mosley. He is my guest. Let me see who this is. I don't think so. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the wrong number.
Okay, thank you. Wrong number. Well, David Mosley will be calling in at any minute now. He is an author, a film writer, a producer. He is a mentor. And he is a down-to-earth kind of guy. I have enjoyed talking with him. He was our guest last hour. And he will finish out this hour. He will be calling in momentarily. Okay, so hopefully those of you who are listening, it would be nice if you could alert some of your friends and say, well, why don't you listen to David Mosley? Now, he's a young gentleman, and I met him in Delaware, Ohio. He was having sort of a meet and greet, him, and we became familiar with him and looked at some of his books that he has published, and he had some young men with him that helped him inspire the book. And this hour, we will be talking about those young men who helped inspire him to write his book. And his upcoming films will be coming in, too. So, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited that He answered my invitation to be a guest on my show, and hopefully, you know, I try to get guests on here to make it interesting for you to want to listen and encourage other people to listen to my show. And I can say it's not just my show, it's your show too. Okay? Alrighty. So we're just waiting on Damon to call us. 11:20. Here he is. Okay. Hello, Damon.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Thank you for calling back.
No, no problem.
Oh, great. Great, great, great. Well, we had a last hour was good.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yes, it was.
I
do,
the
too.
The listeners agree.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. Because, you know, this show also will go in my archives. And like a week from today, you can go back and pick out the date. It won't have your name on it, but it does categorize the date that you were on. And you can go back and listen to it.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, I would like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do we leave off at?
We were talking about how we need each other, both as a nation and as a community in particular, but just how the idea that we need each other and we shouldn't spend so much time in disagreement that we can't get anything done.
Right. Absolutely. Sounds like politics, doesn't it?
100%.
It's always about the fight.
It is.
Yes. So, introduce yourself again. I have different listeners. This is a different hour, so.
Okay. My name is Damon Mosley, and I recently released a new photo book entitled Smile for We.
And not only that, you are a author, a film writer?
Yes. I'm a screenwriter, movie producer, and eventually I would like to get into directing, but that's a little bit further down the line, but those are definitely my career goals.
Great. Those are great. I enjoyed meeting you, and hopefully I'll meet you once again, and really enjoying our time together. This hour, I would like to talk about Smile, where we are. What inspired you to write this book?
Sure. It was the first thing that inspired me was it was a direct response to the police violence against unarmed black men, mm-hmm. Problems that we've been witnessing around the country here for the past several years now. I just felt so powerless initially, and I wanted to do something. I couldn't stay on the sidelines anymore. I'm at a point in my life where I'm just kind of tired of talking. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to do some action. And this is the one thing that I could do, given my skill set as an artist, to try to bring some awareness to the issue and to also help ease some of the pain that we're feeling as black men from being bombarded with these images. That was my first motivation. But then as I got into the project and I saw how difficult it was for some of my subjects to actually smile, like to be vulnerable enough to let themselves smile. Mm-hmm. Then I realized that I had a second inspiration, which was I want to help us reclaim our humanity and help us feel more comfortable being human, you know?
Right.
Just being comfortable enough to, we don't have to be so uptight, we don't have to be so hard and aggressive. We can have our full range of emotion and have our full range of human experiences. I think that will make us, you know, better husbands, better fathers, better sons, better citizens. So those are my two twin motivations.
Yes, that's great. You know, and you're so right about that. Black men need to know that they are valued and they are loved. They need to know
yes,
that.
Yes, ma'am.
And that gruff look on their face all the time is just disappointment. After disappointment, after disappointment, after letdown, and I can't get anywhere. Even when I get up, it seems like I'm back down on the ground again. And
yeah,
when is it going to happen for me? You know, and it's like I'm ridiculed. And but you know, there comes a time when we have to cast all those things away and rise up within ourselves and say, "I am somebody. I'm here for a reason." That's what,
exactly.
That's what I tell my grandsons. God didn't bring you here for nothing.
Exactly. Yes, ma'am. Having that sense of purpose is key. You know, I think that I'm not sure if you've seen this a lot in your personal circle or if you've just heard it kind of just around, but there seems to be so much more people that I know who have anxiety, they have trouble sleeping. Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that I hear often. And people are, you know, much more than I've heard it in the past. And I think, like, that lack of purpose has something to do with it. You know, if you were getting your car and you didn't know where you were going, that would be pretty nerve-wracking. You know, if you just got in your car and you didn't really have a destination in mind, you knew you had to go somewhere, but you weren't really quite sure where you were going or how you were going to get there, that'd be nerve-wracking. But when you have a purpose and you know your destination and you know your route, or if you don't know it, you're somewhat familiar with a route to get there, that's a lot more settling. And, you know, like you said, I just want to help Black men feel loved, feel safe, and to reclaim their humanity, because people try to make us like we're just threats, not human beings. We're just something to be feared, something to be dealt with harshly, something to be punished. There's nothing out there for us that says, hey, how are you doing today? Mm-hmm. What's your story? How do you feel? What do you think? You know, I think there's such a focus on our physicality and our production and what we can bring to other people and provide for other people. There's never any focus on our intellectual, spiritual pursuits, who we are, how we feel, and what we think.
Right. So. Right. And that's the anatomy of a human being.
Yeah.
It's our makeup.
That's what makes us human. That's what separates us from the animals, is that we have, you know, a conscious. We have a soul.
And your title, Smile for We.
Oh, yeah. That was like a play on words. I wanted something catchy, of course. Yeah, okay. It helps with marketing and things like that. But I also wanted to say, not just smile for me, like not smile for, it's not the Damon Mosley show. I want it to be inclusive. I want to make sure that this project, everything about it, had the spirit of inclusion. And I wanted to make sure that people understood from the very beginning, from the book cover, this is going to be about the group, not just, you know, an individual. This is just, everyone's along for this ride.
Yes, we are all along for this ride, because we're all trying to find a better way and to lift our spirits.
Absolutely.
You know, and have a smile on all of our faces. Absolutely. And, you know, smile is like the sunshine. When people see your teeth, it brightens up your face. It brightens up other people's face. It doesn't take much to smile. Or it shouldn't.
Right.
It shouldn't.
It's really the most natural expression of joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to deny yourself that, you're missing out on an important part of life.
The best part.
Exactly. I agree. The best part.
The best part is to have some type of joy or excitement or something to look forward to, you know. But I think eventually this will be catching on, hopefully, like wildfire pretty soon here.
Now, I hope so. That would be great.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? But, you know, I think if a lot of us, you know, you doing what you do, and we have mentors on the side, and like you said, if the seeds are planted, eventually they'll start growing. So, and I think there are a lot of us planting seeds, and even people of other races that really care about African Americans, they also plant positive seeds. So when God gives the increase, it'll just spring up in us and some of us, and we'll take on a whole new personality, and, you know, and be looking forward to finding my purpose. Well, what am I here for? You know, let me go find out. You know, what do I like to do? And I used to ask my grandson, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. You don't know. I said, I wanted to be 100 things when I was growing up, at least 10. You know, you got to have some type of imagination, you know, to live in this world. I just couldn't understand. You don't know what you want to be when you grow up. So he was young then, but still, I thought he should have wanted to be something, even if it was Superman, you know, where it came,
right.
You know, so I just think it's so positive for young people to have an imagination.
I agree. You know, here recently, I was asked to speak at an event sponsored by the Harmony Project here in Columbus, which is like a community choir that does a nonprofit that does just great work in the community. But the title they gave me for the night that I spoke was Dreams. And how I connected that to the book is that, you know, your dreams are actually very courageous. Like, to actually have a dream, you have to be very, very confident, because you have to actually see yourself as worth the things you're dreaming about.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to that self-esteem piece where, like, if you don't think you deserve anything, then it's going to be very hard to dream it. Because you already have, you know, there's going to be a stumbling block right from the beginning, because you don't think you're worth anything. So why even dream? I don't deserve that thing. I don't deserve this career or this, you know, this goal or what have you. So, you know, and I told the audience, you know, that's what I want this book to do, is to free up that blockage, you know, that negative perception of ourselves that we don't deserve to dream, to have an imagination. You know, we spend so much time reacting, things that are said about us, things that are done to us, that it leaves no room for imagination and for dreams and some of the lightness of being. You know, everything's just so heavy. It's such a burden. It's such a fight. If we can just have, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes a day where we can unball our fist,
right,
it would be much better.
Right. My little grandson is balling up his fist already. He's just 10 months old. Okay? He gets angry.
He's got to be tough. He's trying to show you how he's tough, guy. He's strong. You know, it starts early. That macho-ness, that, you know, that hyper-masculinity that we're viewed with.
I could not get over that. I don't see him that often, but he was like voicing his opinion, like, little fist just balled up just as tight. I'm like, oh my goodness. Wow.
That is too much.
It is. I thought the same thing. Boy, you better settle down. Oh, my, my, my. But I love this book. I love the young man that you chose. And I would like to talk about a few of these. You know these young men personally, don't you?
Most of them. There are 32 portraits in the book. And I would say I know well over half. I know at least, you know, 20 of them. The other ones I just kind of met. There's guys that, a few of them are guys that I, certain restaurants that I frequent. There's some servers and bartenders that I asked them to be in the book. There's one guy I met in the lobby of my eye doctor's office. So some people were chance encounters, but I do know about, I'd say, 20 of them.
Okay, at least 20 of them. And tell me what inspired you to take their pictures. Were they willing to smile for you? What about Victor?
Oh, well, Victor, yeah, he's like a little brother to me. He's a writer as well. He does comic books and children's books. So I've known him for, gosh, I actually met him when I did my children's book in 2008. I was in a movie theater at the time, and he came up and introduced himself, and we've been close friends ever since. But he was a natural. Victor's always smiling. I think he's probably one of the only people in the book who smiles more than me. So he was an easy one. I just went down to his studio in his basement where he does his work, and that was probably one of the easier shoots that I had, because he's a natural.
I'm glad you mentioned the children's books that you have written. Speak on that now.
Yeah, that book was called I've Gotta Have Those Shoes. I love sneakers. I've been collecting sneakers my whole life. But I was actually, back in 2008 and 2009, I partnered with a charitable organization out of Charlotte, North Carolina, called Samaritan's Feet. And I went with them to Peru, where we distributed tens of thousands of shoes to needy kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a life-changing experience for me. Just to, like I said, going back to my childhood roots of growing up in the church, in my adulthood, I can't say I've continued to go to church as often as I used to, but being down there on the mission trip, doing the actual work, you know, we pretty much, we didn't just give out the shoes, we gave them clean socks, We washed everybody's feet. It was really hands-on in a literal sense. So it was very humbling, and it was a way for me to connect back to, like I said, my spiritual roots of my upbringing.
What type of country is Peru?
Oof, Peru is, you know, there's parts like the capital, Lima, Peru, is very modern, but there are parts that are jungle and other parts that are deserts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were going to like the third world condition parts. We didn't spend a lot of time in the touristy areas. Some parts are very much third world country. And there was, you know, we do have poverty here in America for sure. But that's another level, you know, when you go down there and children are only eating, you know, twice a week, if that, and they don't have any shoes and they've never had a pair of shoes. It's just a whole nother level of perception and awareness, you know, that I got from those two trips.
Wow. What an experience.
I'm very grateful for having gone. Like, I didn't plan to go twice. I went in 2008, and I had such a great experience that I doubled up and went again in 2009, and I was going to go the following year, but I ended up having surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, only for medical reasons did I not go 3 years in a row. But it was something that I really enjoyed.
Wow. Yep. Being a help to others is great. Now, what nationality of people live in Peru?
They're of Spanish descent. They are Peruvian. They have their country and their nationality, but they speak Spanish.
Okay.
Some parts speak French if you go into other parts of the country, but the parts that I went to, it was a Spanish-speaking territory.
Do you speak Spanish?
You know, I used to. I used to be fluent. Way back when I was a kid, you know, I took Spanish in junior high school, but before that, my mom had me in Spanish classes at Ohio State on the weekend, like recreational classes, like in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fluent at one point, and then when I lived in New York, of course, I used it all the time. But when I came back to Ohio, I just didn't use it. I can hear it, and I can pick it back up really fast, but I just don't have the confidence to speak it like I used to. So
mm-hmm.
if I were to study and bear down, I'm sure it would come back pretty fast. But I just fell out of the habit of using it here, you know, like I did when I was in New York. I mean, it was a daily thing, you
mm-hmm.
know, when I lived there, when I was in school, and even I lived in New York after college. You know, you'd go to neighborhood stores, you'd order your food, or, you know, it was just something I used nonstop. But when I came back to Ohio, unfortunately, I just lost it.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'll pick it back up. That's one of my goals is that, because, you know, to have that and to not have it now, I feel like, man, I've spent too much time learning that. But, you know, like I said, if I'm in the environment, I will pick it back up really fast.
I'm sure
you know, when I'm on those trips, you know, sometimes when you have to, we're in a pressure situation, like you're stuck and when you have to ask for directions, you'd
right.
be surprised at how quick the recall, fight or flight kicks in, and those things will come right back really fast when, you know, you're in the right situation. So, but I do plan to take some time and study it some more so I can get those skills back.
That's good. Now, I wasn't trying to put you down because I can't speak it. You know, we used to have over the PA system when I was in grade school. I think it was once a week. Mr. Mendoza used to come on and give us somewhat of a Spanish lesson, but I didn't really catch on. And then after elementary school, that was it. You know, then you had like high school, and then you could pick it up again in junior high. Then high school, you could pick it up again. And I just really didn't have a knack for it anyway, nor a desire to do it. But it seems to be pretty fluent nowadays. And I just commend you, you know, that you even know how to speak it at all. Like you said, it wouldn't take much to stir it back up. And I'm sure of that.
You know, I think it's one of those things where when you learn another language, I don't have any children, but if I had children, one thing I would be adamant that they do, and I would give them their choice of which among these things to choose from, but I would want them to play a sport, I would want them to play an instrument, and I would want them to take a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
Because it rounds out, you know, your thinking. It makes you a citizen of the world. It's very humbling,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you automatically respectful of other cultures. You know what I mean? Because you have to humble yourself and really enter that situation as a child to learn something from scratch. And I think that that's what's kind of needed, is that if not a naturally kind and caring person, then one thing that would kind of force you into that place is if you were to learn more about another culture, learn the language, which of course would open you up to other experiences within that culture, it would just make you have a lot more respect for other people, which is just kind of what the world really needs right now.
Amen. I agree. I agree, Damon, so much so. So do you know Alfonso?
Oh, yeah. He's somebody that I met. I'm also a big music fan, so I always like to listen to, you know, albums and CDs and tapes and all that kind of stuff. So one store I used to always go to, Alfonso worked there as a cashier many years ago, and I just would see him all the time. He was always so happy, and he knew everybody. Just never was in a bad mood. So he and I stayed friends again for many, many years, and he was another one that was just very, you know, if he's not laughing, then he's smiling. He's always doing one of the two. So a very easy shoot that day was to catch him. He and I hadn't seen each other in a while. Just, you know, work and life takes us in different directions. He's a husband and father now. So hadn't seen him in a while. So I just called him and said, hey, man, told him about the project. Asked him if I could come to his job and take a couple minutes of his time. He said, sure. I showed up, and we just got the pictures.
Great. He looks like he smiles a lot.
Oh, all the time. He's somewhere smiling right now. I can guarantee you. If we could find a hidden camera and see what he's up to, he's smiling right now somewhere.
Mm-mm-mm. So what about Junie? Do you know him?
Oh, yeah. Junie, he was a chef at a neighborhood restaurant here on the east side of Columbus. His restaurant is called Creole Kitchen. Unfortunately, when the book was published, and I went to go give him his copy, I found out that he had passed away.
Oh, no.
Unexpectedly. So that was kind of a bummer, you know. He was always kind of a neighborhood staple. You know, it's a very popular restaurant here, and everyone knows him and loves his food, loves his smile. Mm-hmm. And so I was very saddened to find out that he had passed in between when I took the picture and when the book was actually published.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
What about Ricardo? You know him?
Oh, that's the cover guy. That's that guy on the cover.
Oh, the same guy? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, two different shots Ricardo of him, right?
On the cover. Now, I did not know him prior to. There's also on smileforweed.com, the website where I sell the book, also have t-shirts and coffee mugs and just other merchandise, kind of really get the idea out there. And the t-shirt shop that makes, the clothing, he worked at he's an art designer there. And so when I came in to kind of like, you know, talk about different products I wanted to try out and adjusting the size of the artwork and things like that, I just had really good interactions with him. Again, he had a great smile. He was always very friendly. And so initially he wasn't even a part of the project. I had already had the guys in mind that I was going to shoot, but after interacting with him while I was getting my samples and stuff made, I asked him if he would like to be a part of it, and one thing led to another, and he ended up being on the cover. He just had a great smile. I was like, yeah, I've got it. Like, you're my cover guy.
Yeah. He does have a great smile. Yeah, he sure does. Well, that is great, and he's an artist.
Yeah, he does graphic design, and he does some music as well, but his day job is in graphic design, and he's a very talented young man.
That's great. What about Killer? You know him?
I've known Killer since I was 11 years old. Yeah,
oh,
so we met at martial arts class. I was in 6th grade, and I think he was in 8th grade, and we signed up for these classes here in the neighborhood, and we being partners, you know, in martial arts, we just became friends, and our families got to know one another, and I stayed in contact with him pretty much all my life. And he owns his family owns a business, plumbing business, that's been around for over 30 years here in Columbus.
Right. And I like the idea that the young men that you do have in here, they're doing something with their lives, and very positive.
That's the thing. You know, again, the way we get portrayed, it's just not even true. Not only is it, you know, it's negative in nature, but it's just not true. Mm-hmm. Most black men are not criminals.
Right.
Most black men are not absent fathers. Like, this people keep repeating these things about us so that they can keep mistreating us or make it okay for other people to mistreat us. But that doesn't match the reality. I know so many amazing black men that have helped me get to where I am today, and that provide me with daily encouragement and motivation and inspiration. And like I said, they go to the same churches and schools as everybody else. They provide useful services to the community. So we just kind of get seen by mass media that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, no one's really showing the reality. They'd rather show the stereotype. That's what gets promoted by mass media. But yeah, I mean, most guys that I know are very productive citizens. You know, like I said, husbands, fathers, sons, mentors. It's just time for someone to shine a light on them.
Right, right. That's so good, so good. And when you were talking, before and after pictures crossed my mind. Meeting people when they're down and, you know, after they go through something great and get inspired, and pictures afterwards, you know, when they have mm-hmm. that big, beautiful smile on their face and saying, I am somebody. And I'm grateful to the world and to God that I'm here.
Definitely.
I'm here. I am here.
Definitely.
To show my part, to do my part of life and contribute to the world and to society. Wow.
And that's what it's all about, having that purpose and not having that purpose. Finding your own purpose as opposed to having your purpose defined for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many young black men today, they're letting the media give them their purpose, and that purpose leads them to jail
mm-hmm.
or death. So
yes.
We have to find our own purpose and not follow that path that mass media and the mainstream, you know, movies and TV shows and music, like they're going to lead you down another path. But that's not the path that most of us are on. And I think the key audience that I'm trying to reach is the younger guys, because they don't know who they are yet.
That's true.
To show them who they can be.
Right. That's so important and so necessary. And you know what? I the time is urgent.
Oh, yeah.
The time is urgent.
We can't afford to lose. I think we've lost several generations to some of these negative energies and negative behaviors, and I don't think we can afford to lose too many more. You know, it is like you said, the time is now. I think Black America, we're at a crossroads right now. We're in a pivotal place in our history as a people here in the 21st century, where we have to decide who we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to really make a decision here. We're going to have to act on it sooner than later, because the world itself is changing very fast.
Mm-hmm.
We're encountering all types of new threats to the stability of our of American culture, not just Black America, but just of American culture.
Right.
So we can't, we don't have the luxury to be caught up with some of the things that we were caught up in the 20th century. We've got to keep up. Or run the risk of being left behind.
There you go. Get run over by a Mack truck, right?
Yes.
Stand
yes.
still.
It's coming. It is coming.
I agree with you. What about Todd?
Oh, that's my eye doctor. Yeah.
Todd, oh, yeah. Okay. I see that. Yes.
That is my eye doctor. Yeah. I've been a client of his for, he's someone else who I didn't know. I mean, I knew him prior to the photo shoot, but he wasn't someone that I grew up or anything with. He used to have an office down here in downtown Columbus, and he's since moved out to a suburb called Westerville, Ohio. But I stay with him. It's a much longer drive,
mm-hmm.
but I stay with him. You know, he's a really good doctor. He's brilliant. He does very good work, very thorough, and just a good guy, good father again. And I made sure that I give him my business, even though he's moved so farther away from me.
And Roberto?
Yeah, now that's my favorite shoot. That one right there, that's a special one. That's a spiritual encounter. So on my very first shoot, and it wasn't Roberto, I was just kind of toying around with the idea, not really knowing exactly how I was going to execute it. So I asked one of my friends to kind of, you know, let me test him out. Let me just kind of see. So we were in an alley in downtown Columbus against this wall. And a man walked up to me. I didn't know what his intentions were because, you know, we're downtown. It's an alley, really narrow space. And he kind of brushed up against me. And I'm thinking, like, okay, you know. And then here I am. Right? Now I'm internalizing all the bad stereotypes about black men. Right? Like, I'm thinking this guy's some kind of a threat. Then he asked me. He told me that he lived in a nearby shelter. And he just asked me, like, you know, what are you guys doing? So I explained the concept and explained the book and what I was trying to do. And he just was so encouraging. He said he was proud of me. Couldn't wait to see it. And I said, you know what? You have to be in this project. Like, this is divine intervention. Like, you have to be in this project. So we just sat him down right behind us where we were and just took his picture on the spot. And that's my favorite picture in the book by far.
That's great. That is really great. Wow. And Christopher, how old is he?
Christopher is, I want to say, he's like in his mid-20s, I want to say. He's, and again, another great situation. He wasn't someone that I grew up with or knew beforehand either. I have an elderly neighbor who has some health issues. And he's this big old St. Bernard, about 120 pounds.
Mm.
And, you know, because my neighbor couldn't get around to the groomer or anything, it was in the heat of the summer, and, you know, St. Bernard's get kind of a woolly coat. So I just noticed that this dog was, like, just, you know, super shaggy and looked uncomfortable, too hot to have all that fur on. So I offered to take my neighbor's dog to get a trim, you know, get her coat shaved down. And I didn't really know anybody, so I asked around, and someone referred me to Christopher. He's actually a dog groomer. Again, not in a profession that you would think a young black man would be. You think everyone just plays basketball or raps or sells drugs, but here we are. Today we've just talked about plumbers, we've talked about, you know, art designers, and now we're talking about a dog groomer. So that goes to show how much of a variety there is of black men in the community. Well, Christopher, I explained my situation, said I needed some help with my neighbor's dog to get her trimmed. He gave me a really good price. He just wanted to help out. And he spent 4 hours, like, trimming her nails, getting her coat done, gave me a really good price. And, you know, when I came time to do this project, I said, I got to have you in this book. Now, he didn't want to smile. He was very self-conscious about the gap in his front teeth. So I had to kind of make him laugh to get him to loosen up.
Oh, that's something. I bet that was special.
It was, and now it's, The fun thing about Christopher, I mean, he was by far the most difficult one to make smile, because not only did he not want to smile, but he was physically afraid. Like, he was, like, shaking. Like, he didn't want to do it.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, it was a real fear or a real thing he had to overcome. So I had some, we had some TikTok videos, and I just made him laugh watching those. I took a picture while he was laughing, but since then, the cool part about that is now when I see his social media posts, now he's smiling. Like, he was, before he would always give, like, a closed mouth smile. Because he was afraid, he was embarrassed of his gap in his teeth. But if you go to his Facebook page, Instagram page, you'll see nothing but open tooth smiles, gap and all.
Well, great.
So I'm proud that he was able to overcome that, and proud that the book was able to kind of start that process for him.
Right. It makes me think of Clarence Williams III. Remember him?
Wasn't he an actor from Columbus when he here? I think is he from Columbus?
I don't know if he's from Columbus. He played on...
No, that's Hal. I'm thinking of Hal Williams. I'm sorry.
Clarence Williams, the third. He played on Mod Squad. Remember that back in the day?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
He had that gap in his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. He was also, I think, the dad in Purple Rain. I'm a huge Chris
yes,
fan,
he was. Yes, he was.
Yep, that was him. I remember him now.
Wow. He had a large gap in his teeth, too. But, hey, it made him, helped make him famous.
Exactly. He made that thing work for him.
Yes, he did. So, Christopher, yeah, I'm proud of him.
He's a good young man. He moved to Atlanta to start his own dog grooming business since the book was published, so... He's doing great things, and, I'm just happy for some of these chance encounters because, again, you know, it just goes to show, like, we are not all bad. We're not even, most of us aren't even bad. I want to say all. We're mostly not bad. So
that's true.
It just takes us to reach out to one another and to work together, like I was able to do with these gentlemen on this book. And it's possible.
Right.
Definitely possible.
Right. And I think a lot of times it's the choices that people make that put them in bad situations, you know, and you know, gets them down and they can't figure out a way out of it, or at least a decent way out of it, and they just get overwhelmed with situations and with life. And life is at a point that is very easy to get overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
And that can slow you down.
They have a global pandemic that we're still not completely out of, on top of all the social and political unrest that we're experiencing right now. This is a, this is, like we said earlier, it's just, we don't have the luxury of being stuck with some of the old issues. We've got to move past some of those problems and be ready to face the new ones.
Amen, because they're coming.
They are. That's a certainty.
Either move on or get left behind.
100%.
Yes. Election is over. Tuesday is over.
Yeah.
Let's move on, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like, what are we going to do in the meantime? We can't just focus. You know, we can't come together every 4 years, every 2 years. Like, what are we doing in between these elections that are positioning us for our votes to even matter? You know, I have nothing against voting, but for your votes to actually matter, you have to stay engaged throughout the whole process. You can't just show up at the polls on Tuesday. It's what you do in between time that really matters.
Yes. And, you know, a lot of young people that I know of, they don't even vote. My vote doesn't count. That's how they feel. Well, they're going to do what they want to do anyway. And what can we do to get these young people inspired? No matter which way they vote, but just get out and vote. Some of them are registered and won't vote.
Yeah, and that's, to be honest, that starts with education. And I don't mean just in terms of scholastically, I just mean in terms of, like, just what voting means, how it, like, some people don't really understand how government works, both local or national. So it's very, voting is an abstract thing, you know. They go in there, they get their sticker, and that's about it. But they don't really understand the nuance of how local government, national government works. They don't understand, you know, and I think for you to really, for you to be strategic with your vote, or to even see your vote as part of a larger strategy, you would first need to understand how all that stuff works. Like, most people won't know. I mean, these are even grown folks. You'd be surprised when people vote religiously, and that's great, but they don't really know how government works. They can't name their city councilmen. They can't name their treasurer. I mean, they just don't know. They're just doing it, and that's great, but I think understanding, and if you could show someone the rules of the game, so to speak, then they can understand where they fit into the game.
Right.
That would be my, you know, because it's very hard when something's abstract and it's just an intangible thing. It's very hard to really put your weight behind it. But if you kind of know, okay, well, if I do this, this is, you know, this is how I can win, this is how it can benefit me, that will kind of counterbalance some of that feeling of despair and that feeling of uselessness that your vote doesn't count and they're going to do what they want to do. Well, maybe, you know, if you vote, they still may do what they want to do. But one thing is for sure, if you don't vote, they will definitely do what they want to do. So,
right.
Kind of like, you've got to kind of see, you know, see it in terms of how you can be useful with it, as opposed to just, you know, I think people, young people naturally rebel against us older folks anyway, right? Like, they don't want to listen to us.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Yeah, they do it out of spite, just to be a rebel, right? Just to go against the grain. But they just need to be taught how politics works, and because all politics really is just the distribution of resources.
That's so true.
And anyone who's not interested in the distribution of resources, I don't know why you wouldn't be.
That's true.
You know,
that's true. Well, we are out of time again. I pray your mother's doing well. I didn't want you to think I forgot about her. I have enjoyed our time together.
She got a good bit of help, so thank you for that. I appreciate your thoughts and prayers. She got a, you know, she came through okay. So
well,
we're
praise
good.
God, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, and God bless.
You too.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. Damon Mosley, everyone. It was such a good time with him, and to listen to how he authored his book and his things that he has just gone through in life and experience. This is Linda Sims on WGH Talk, A Voice of a People. Till next time, be blessed and enjoy your weekend.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP 107.1 FM, Mary.